this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, OPEC, Stacks and Jacks, I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 93. After a huge rally from the depths of yesterday, we were down 250 in the NASDAQ at one point and down 45 in the S&P, and the S&P finished up. So our few-day run down in the market kind of turned yesterday. We'll see if maybe some of the numbers, the CPI and PPI numbers leaked. Oh, that could never happen, or are being scrubbed or something. But it looks like maybe that's it for the down for a while. You know, we will see. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, fire.
Well, we got fires, and we got
You know the Beavis and Butthead thing? Fire.
Yeah.
Fire. by the way, where's the MTS?
The MTS.
Where is it?
Good question. That is a good question.
You know, I must have a deficiency in my ability to count because it's supposed to be the 8th business day. It's the 8th business day. The 8th business day of each month is the alleged release date, and. You know, we had this Carter thing, right?
Well, we're late on the money supply every month, too, and everybody feel like it.
Well, I thought it was going to be out Friday, okay, along with NFP. And, no. And then, you know, and then I'm like, wait a minute. You know, Carter's funeral, okay. Because, so, you know, because they shut down the post office. You know, that's officially not a business day, right?
Well, except... It was the screwiest day ever. The futures were open. The stocks were closed.
Well, yeah.
The schools were open.
I get that. I mean, you know, some things were open, some things were not, whatever. But so I'm like, okay. So I expected it yesterday, right? And because, you know, that would be the next business day, right?
Yeah.
It'd be a long one. And 2 o'clock comes and goes. And
doesn't it say on there when the next release is? I thought it did.
It says the monthly treasury statement is released at 2 p.m. on the 8th business day of each month.
Well.
That's what it says. Next issue that's due is December 2024. Now, of course, the reason I'm very interested in this is that, as I've noted, there's this market deterioration that's happened since the end of the fiscal year in terms of the nation's finances. It's kind of like somebody flipped a switch and said, I'm going to see if I can bankrupt the country before I leave office. And was first, I think it was, I'm trying to buy the election with, you know, more deficit spending. But then, you know, after the first month, he lost, right? You know, the guy who was twisting the knobs, I mean, you know, at that point, you know, Harris was... almost wanting to twist the knobs, but she hadn't won yet.
As you recall, when Trump lost last time, he was dying to send people more COVID checks, and the Congress wouldn't let him.
Yeah, it is not even slight. I mean, you know, the latest insult is that Biden supposedly managed to find, you know, another I don't know how many tens or hundreds of thousands of people that he thinks he's going to. Make us pay for their student debt, and of course the problem with all of this is that this is the DACA strategy, okay, that Barack Obama was so good at. I know that, as he stands in the Rose Garden, I know this is illegal. I know it's unconstitutional. I know I don't have the authority to do it. I'm going to do it anyway. And the reason I'm going to do it is because the explosion of outrage that will happen if somebody tries to retract it is so great that I'm reasonably sure that even though it's illegal, they'll let me get away with it. And the problem so far is that, at least at the court level, those things have all been repeatedly shot down when it comes to the student debt stuff. So the problem with sending these letters out to people, though, is it's not really about actually giving anybody relief. It's about generating rage, which of course Biden and Harris hope is directed at Trump, when it turns out that this letter you got in the mail that says that your $200,000 lesbian studies degree really hasn't had its debt canceled, you have to pay it, is great enough and will boomerang back on the Republicans. You want to talk about a cynical approach to reality, there you go. All right.
Well, we got a lot of hate in this country, and unfortunately, I think we have a little bit on the show, which is kind of bugging me a little bit. I mean, we got to knock everybody who has an ounce of brains, and you sure as hell do, you got way more than an ounce, knows that there's some serious fixing that's got to happen on the student loan stuff. Brought upon by the four doctors or something declared bankruptcy on day one of the thing. I mean, and the idea that Congress somehow can't do their job and somebody looks at it and tries to do something different. How many people do you think could declare bankruptcy that where the people are like dead and Aunt Nancy's got the co-sign on the loan and she's in a nursing home, for God's sake?
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, my, you know, I've spilled plenty of digital ink on this thing since all this insanity started. And at the end of the day, the problem is that nobody, and it's the same, Chief, it's the same basic issue we have in the medical system, okay? Nobody wants to do anything that cuts down the cash flow. Right? They don't care who they screw via any other means, and they don't care what the impact is of it via any other means. The key item, the thing you cannot do politically is in any way reduce the cash flow. And that's the goal, okay? Now, that's not supposed to be the goal, okay? But that's the goal. I mean, you look at the stuff that's going on out in California right now. You've got there's a guy who found the LA Fire District's maintenance shed for the trucks. Okay, and the number of fire engines that are sitting around with their finger in their butt instead of being able to be deployed because, you know, there's something wrong with them. There's a part that they don't have or, you know, whatever have you.
That's always the case.
Well, I understand that. But here we have, you know, all right, so you got some equipment down. But then again, we also have reports that when the first ignitions were called in to 911, it was an hour before anybody got a piece of equipment up there. Where they were, okay. Now, you know, LA County is not that big, all right. And nobody had anything pre-positioned with the Santa Anas. I mean, this was the weather side of this was predicted a week in advance, so there was absolutely no reason on God's green earth that you couldn't have had equipment and tankers full of water positioned, you know, all around the area, right? I mean, now you don't know exactly where something's going to happen.
Every time something happens, you could always have done a better job, especially if it's anything government related.
Sure.
But the fact is, this particular thing. I mean, I went years ago. I told a story the other day. Years ago, I had the nicety or whatever the honor of actually staying at these people's house up in Hollywood Heights. Nice people.
Yeah.
The guy was the. He was the assistant producer of Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
And then, of course, who was that? Stephen Bochco was the guy who did that? So Stephen Bochco went from Hill Street Blues to, remember his next show? You might remember this. You're an old dude. Remember Doogie Howser?
No.
Well, it's because it lasted about a month. He blew off Hill Street Blues, which probably could have gone another year or two. It was a great show. And he decided he's going to put up this Doogie Howser. Well, this guy came with him. It is his associate producer. Doogie Howser was about as big a flop as you could find. And of course, the blame was all heaped on this guy, right, Tori? The year before, he was at his house for Thanksgiving, and then he wouldn't even answer his phone calls. Hollywood is an interesting place. So back in those days, I was, a reasonable runner, just to keep shape brother sports. I go jogging out there in the hills, and I'm going, what are people doing up here? There were house sites that had to be all I've heard from everybody, including people this weekend, oh man, these guys didn't do any controlled burns. Carl, I was there maybe in October. You look down this hill, it had to be 500 feet down to God knows where. The thing was totally dry. It had a wet spring. It had to be a foot and a half high, and I'm going, good Lord, this looks like
a
haystack.
God, if that gets lit, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine the firemen would have the stones to have a controlled burn on that slope. I can't imagine.
But the thing is that everybody, the constant refrain that I have heard from everyone trying to duck responsibility for doing anything, all right, is climate change. You guys need to put your trucks away. We have to have all electric infrastructure.
We all know that's nuts.
It's nuts at a bunch of levels, because one of the things that has happened, that has come out of this insane obsession, is that California has actually banned fixed site backup generators. All right, now I used to be responsible because they use carbon-based fuels. I was responsible in a former life, before I was running my company, for a data center. And sitting outside, we had a big UPS.
By the way, you are correct. The last time this thing came out was 12/11, and now we're at 1/14, and we don't have it.
Yeah. So I was responsible for a data center, all right? And we had this big honking UPS in the data center, and the next room over was a huge flooded battery bank that had to have special venting and sealed doors and everything, because flooded batteries create hydrogen, which, of course, is a potential explosion risk. So, and this is, nowadays we have lithium, which that just starts you on fire. But, at the time, the technology was essentially what amounted to submarine batteries, was essentially what they were. But they had to be maintained. You had to make sure the water levels were okay in them and things like this. And then if the power went off, the UPS was there and held things up, because we had a bunch of computers in the data center. And outside, sitting on a huge tank full of diesel fuel, was this big honking diesel generator.
By the way, Kevin says that Doogie Howser actually lasted four seasons. I think they were forgettable four seasons, but he said it launched the career of Neil Patrick Harris. Who's he?
I don't know. The point being, power goes off, the UPS holds things up for a little while, but can't for very long, because the batteries only so last for, they were good for about 10 minutes, which was enough time for the generator to start and pick up the load and top batteries back off and make sure that the computers kept running, okay? Even though the rest of the building was dark.
Yeah.
But here's the point of this. Water systems, municipal water systems, are for the most part, the daily operation is gravity fed. Okay, there's a water tower about a mile and a half from my house. I can see it out my front door.
Well, that's an emergency.
No, Chief, you have to understand how this works. Power, the power system, you power a pump, but the demand on that system varies greatly from minute to minute. You take a shower, you flush the toilet, you turn your dishwasher on, you wash a load of clothes, whatever. You are not doing that at the same instant your next door neighbor is. This is the same situation we had when I ran my internet company. There is no possible way that I could have provisioned enough infrastructure at a price you could pay to provide 100% of the bandwidth that you potentially could use off my internet company for everybody that had bought service from me at the same time. That was not possible. You wouldn't be able to, could I have engineered for that? Of course I could have engineered for that. However, if I had done that, you would have never been able to pay the bill and nobody would have bought anything. So we did. The same thing's true for water. The same thing's true for power. You have a 200 amp breaker in your house, but if you and all your neighbors draw 199 amps at the same time, none of your breakers will trip, but there will not be power in your subdivision if you do that, because the breakers at the distribution system will trip. Okay? Now, they're all built this way. All your basic infrastructure is built. Like, this is one of the reasons you have natural monopolies, and people talk about them once in a while. And they don't understand the reason that it ends up working like this. But this is the reality. So the way that the water system works is that there is a electrically driven pump that draws from a reservoir, which is your primary source, whether it's a river, whether it's a impoundment, whatever it is, treats that water, and then that pump shoves that water up in a water tower. Okay. And that water tower fluctuates in level. But the actual pressure at your house is from the gravity of that water in the tower coming down the pipe from the tower the top.
That's because you're a suburb guy. They have Oaklawn water towers.
Well, in the cities,
there's you no have towers in Chicago.
No, but you have accumulators, and it works the same way. Right. It's just that it's a sealed system. However, it's a membrane with an air gap in the top, and it works the same way. It's just not sticking up 300 feet in the air.
There's also massive pumping stations here that go down how many feet, and it's.
But the thing is, they're called pumps, not sucks. Okay, they have to be at the source, because you can only draw water up about 33 feet. That's the maximum. And that's just because at that point you have a full vacuum and no water gets there. So they won't prime. So that's the problem. So basically, we out in Los Angeles, because every time you try to put up some new piece of infrastructure, Sierra Club sues, every other green club sues, everyone sues, and as a result, nothing actually gets built. Okay? So you've doubled the population density out there over the last 40
years. I told
you my
grandfather went out there in 1950 and came back and said too many people for the amount of water.
Right. It's not that there's too many people for the amount of water. There's a huge amount of water that falls in the northern part of the state every year, okay, in the form of rain. So much of it that without the infrastructure to impound it.
By the way, the biggest fire that I was reading about was in the northern part of the state.
Yeah. But without impoundment, without management of the water that falls from the sky, it ends up out in the ocean. All right.
Well, maybe another way of doing it is if there's no water, you don't have so many people. Denver doesn't have to be it's not 5 million, but Denver doesn't have to be 5 million people. They don't have water.
Well, it's
near as Phoenix. Duh.
It's a different different states and different situations. Okay, you know, Phoenix. The building in Arizona is. But for the Hoover Dam and the Colorado Aqueduct, okay, Vegas wouldn't be there either. But the thing is, there is no actual shortage of precipitation in the state of California. What there is a shortage of is infrastructure in order to effectively use it, and it is deliberate. It has been blocked, and so over the last 40 or 50 years, the population has doubled, but the infrastructure to actually provide water is zero.
Nobody wants to do any of this stuff until there's a crisis. You know that.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's not that nobody wants to do it. You had a bond issue that was passed, and then they didn't use the money.
The bond issue was passed in November.
No. This one's 10 years old.
Well, the one in November, you got to give them some time on that one.
Well, yeah. But the one that's 10 years old, they haven't built a single reservoir with several billion dollars. Where's the excuse for that?
I would love to see everybody a little more prepared and a little better. I think you can always do better, right?
How about this, Chief?
We're talking about, I've only been in 50 or 60 mile an hour winds twice. One was at the top of the tram at Jackson Hole, where I couldn't wait to get down.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of a 100 mile an hour wind in a fire, we just would have had like a couple of more fire trucks, we'd have been okay. No, you wouldn't have.
No, well, no. Once it gets going and the wind's howling, you ain't putting it out. Okay. That's just the reality of it.
I mean, Chicago was an absolute bleep hole until one day it burned down, right? And all of a sudden, when it burned down, somebody goes, hey, we put it back up. We better do a better job. And they found this guy, Daniel Burnham, and all of a sudden the thing looks a lot better.
I mean, look, San Francisco had a nasty earthquake in, 1906? I think it was 1906.
Well, the earthquake was bad, but the fire buried the place.
Well, that's right. And then, after the fire, the people that ran the city, when we actually had people that paid attention and were competent, they put a second set of fire mains in, and the reason was exactly what is happening right now in Los Angeles. They knew, they realized, the problem, the shake part was bad enough. It was the bake that destroyed everything, and they couldn't put the fires out because they had no water, and the reason was that when the first building caught on fire and burned to the ground, it opened the water line for the municipal service. Then the next house goes up, same thing happens. Pretty soon you have no pressure because you've got all the lines open from the street, okay? And the pressure in the system collapses, and now you've got no way to put it out. So they put a second set of fire mains in. They're still there today. They are there for only one purpose, and that is firefighting. They are not on the municipal supply, so they cannot be broken open when houses and other buildings collapse as they burn. And they stuck a bunch of valved taps at the waterfront so the fireboat can pull up there, drop a suck hose down into the water, and put 30 or 40,000 gallons per minute each into those taps.
The weird part about this whole thing is that I'm kind of on your side here and all this stuff. It's just nobody, I've seen stuff happen.
Well, nobody wants to spend the money, is what it comes down to.
I won't use the term, well, I guess I'm going to have to use the term one-off. When I was messing with the MBTA, remember the song? Well, I wasn't doing the song, but we were making railroad cars for the city of Boston. They had some incredible storm. Remember a place called Anthony's Pier 4, where they had the Peter Stuyvesant with a paddle wheeler from the Mississippi, and somehow they dragged it all the way out to Boston and put it on shore, and it was like a floating restaurant. Okay, so
yeah,
the storm was so powerful it flipped the Peter Stuyvesant up on the ground.
Oh yeah,
and so the city was totally impassable, and to the point where the streets are so narrow. The same thing I was talking about last week. You couldn't plow the snow. There was no place to plow it.
Right, nowhere to put it.
So
right.
the trains aren't running because even if you had a plow in the front of the train, there was no place to shove it. So all of a sudden they go out and buy this thing, and $350,000 back in 1970 something was a lot of money for a machine. They buy this machine. I just saw pictures of it, Carl. You stuck it on the front of a locomotive, and it went along, and it had like ate the snow, and there was some huge boiler in the thing that melted it.
Yeah.
And spit the water to the side.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Guess what? After 15 years, it sat in the yard.
It never got used again.
Never got used. It got so rusty, they scrapped it.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Look at what they actually are using. You had all these environmentalists that were screaming, you can't dump salt water on fires, okay, because, it'll wreck the environment, whatever have you. Look, my yard got flooded several times by hurricanes, all right? Total inundation, up to my ankles, right? Did not kill all the vegetation, did not kill all the animal life. That's just a lie. It's as much a lie as this garbage about global warming. And yet, what did we actually bring down into Southern California? Two super scooper aircraft, turboprops. They're leased from Canada, believe it or not.
Duh, look at the fires they had in Canada the last few years.
Well, yeah, but it's fascinating, okay? These things, they're turboprops, so they have crazy power-to-weight ratios, and a huge tank in the bottom with you know, with essentially a door that they can open up bottom. And it's a seaplane. So they half land the thing, scoop up the water from the ocean with it, and then go fly over the fire and dump it. All right. Well, these things are expensive. All right. I mean, I thought, hey, you know, how pricey are those things? What are they? $2 million? Oh no, they're like 25.
Wow.
crazy money. However, these guys down in California, they passed a several $1 billion bond issue for fire mitigation. That was what it was for. All right. You could have bought 10 of these planes and stuck them inland where there was no risk of, you know, go throw them in the boneyard in Arizona where it's so dry because that, you know, it preserves everything, right? There's no moisture. All right. Have them out there. It costs you a couple hundred grand to keep them all running, right? Because you got to do maintenance on an aircraft whether you're using it or not. And then at the first hint of trouble, as soon as you get an ignition event, you stick one of these suckers in the air and you go dump 10,000 gallons of water.
There's no doubt that everything could be handled better. But by the way, we have a couple, I don't know if we have any left now. We had a couple of fire boats here in Chicago.
Yeah.
Once in a while, if there was a fire in a river, these things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were. There used to be one parked where when I was working for Pullman. It was parked in the river right there, parked, docked.
Yeah.
And you know what? The thing's got to be 60 years old, 70. I think one of them's done, and the other one, if they keep it going just for tours or whatever, the thing hasn't fought a fire in 20 years.
Well, you know what? They've got it. They've got some. There's a couple. The fire boat thing is really about marine fires, okay? Large ships, and I'd be very surprised if they don't have one or two of them down by San Diego because they've got the military ports.
But I mean, these things. If you ever see, they had this thing in the front. It looked like about a 5-inch gun.
Yeah.
You should see the water that.
Oh no,
that
chief. Well,
spray.
Oh yeah. Well, and the other thing is that the guns are symmetrical, and the reason is because otherwise the Newton's third law, right? Reaction and action. So if you're spraying 10,000 gallons per minute in one direction, you need to spray 10,000 in the other. Otherwise, the boat gets driven by the fact that you're doing it. So, I mean, it's fascinating. But these things are built so the main propulsion engines are capable of driving the pumps. Okay, they're actually where the motive power comes from for the pumps. They're unbelievable, and that's what San Francisco.
Hey,
that's why they put those taps down.
Ricky, do we have Joel?
No, there's nobody here yet.
I don't see him.
As soon as
he
pops
on.
By the way, Kenny's in transit, so if you want to, we can continue. But you know, when you start talking about budgets and stuff, you know, you and Kevin are preaching to the choir with me because I think infrastructure is such a huge deal. But the thing of it is about politics is that the three of us have some pretty darn good ideas. But you know what? We're doing Stacks and Jacks. I mean, you're doing other stuff, and we get good jobs and so forth. But the first job for us to do anything political, we got to get in there. We're not going to get in there if we talk about the stuff. I mean, nobody wants to hear about this stuff.
Okay, so basically, the bottom line here is that hiring firefighters because they use the right pronouns, even though they can't carry somebody out the second floor window on a ladder, is an acceptable thing in our government.
It's not. What goes on in government, you get elected and you have support to get there. You take care of the people who supported you on both sides. That's what people have done forever. Somewhere along the line, if somebody's a visionary or he's lucky enough to have something happen where people go, oh, that's got to get fixed, and he can actually. I think those guys will be able to get a lot of money for fire prevention now.
I don't think you're going to see anything change from a standpoint of California and its posture in terms of reducing fire loads and getting infrastructure.
I went through the career of about five governors last night.
None of them did it.
None of them did it. And you know,
right. none of them did. It didn't matter the party, and yet you doubled the load, they doubled the people.
Yeah,
you didn't do anything about the base infrastructure, And then you're surprised when the infrastructure can't handle the demand under a stress situation.
Well, you have this situation every place you look. Take Chicago, for instance. Now, we had a huge population in the city. We used to be over 3 million people. Now we're not. Okay, right. we had a lot of people taking the L and the Archer Express and all that stuff. Now we don't. We still have some, you know, so people take the L. And we build these expressways for people to be able to commute maybe from parts of the city. Well, now it's have a totally different brand of ball. So we're now where the Stevenson Expressway goes, all of a sudden people feel they can live in God knows where, Burridge.
Chief, I lived in the Chicago area for 13 years. I'm well aware of this.
But, I mean, right now, every one of the expressways needs another lane or two.
Right.
Okay?
How are you going to get the land for it?
Okay, that you can do, but it's a big deal. But now, all of a sudden, now if it gets easier to get to the burbs 20 years from now, there's more people in the burbs. What you do is you create your own demise almost.
Well, but the other thing that goes along with this is that as I pointed out, the biggest problem that we have when it comes to government at all levels is that as the grift gets added to, you have more and more people that's how they make their living. Okay? They don't make their living providing a useful good or a useful service. They make their living by skimming off a piece of it.
Oh, without a doubt.
And that gets to such a high percentage that it becomes the driving force behind all of it. Okay? And the problem with allowing this to take place is that, you know, this is what we got going on in the medical system. All right? You've got 20% of the economy that is in there, and 80% of it's stolen. Doesn't provide actual benefit to people. It just fills people's pockets.
But
Chief, you go try to fix that, and the government looks at it and says, but there'd be a depression, because technically more than a 10% decrease, even temporarily, in GDP is a depression.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but
By the way, Joel's on.
He's on, so we're hanging for a minute.
Well,
Joel Dash. Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, guys. I'm surprised you're not talking about the breaking news out of Humboldt Park.
Humboldt Park.
Yeah.
Okay. Enlighten us.
They found a coyote.
Oh, I saw that. Heard that this morning. There's coyotes all over the city.
You know, I went in there earlier, and I asked them if they had cold coyote, and they said, look at the fresh produce section.
There's when Dr. J and I used to come in at, like, 5 o'clock, we'd see one once in a while down by the river. There's big areas in Chicago that are empty.
Yeah, holy mac. Well, no, this is an Aldi grocery store.
Well, he got himself caught inside.
Yeah. So what's up? What's up? Markets?
There's all kinds of coyotes up by where Audrey lives, and she had this one guy, this little guy. I don't know. He got kicked out of his something. This skinny little dude, and all of a sudden, and the poor little guy came in and he eat the pears off her pear trees that fell to the ground. All of a sudden, the next year, he grows up big and strong, and he's got a girlfriend. Oh, so good for him.
That's a good story.
That's a good story. You know, you never see them. If you see them on the side of the road, they don't get hit by cars. They know the traffic. They're taught how to not get hit. It's scary. They're not like raccoons that walk out there and get whacked every night. Anyway, yeah. What about the? That was one hell of a rally starting from yesterday morning, eh?
Yeah, you know what? You know, by the dippers came in. Depot, you know, oversold conditions really didn't see a catalyst, and I think that's just the kind of market that you're going to have this year. I don't know if you're going to, you know, get 20% on the upside or 20% on the downside. I think, you know, I think it's going to be a choppy year, at least in the early part, until we get more clarity on the inflation, which we will get today at 8:35 Eastern, 7:35 Central, and tomorrow. Also, administration policies are not clear yet. So, you know, a couple unknowns here, a little bit of a A good January was snuffed out kind of early. But your leader, the laggards trade, you do have some laggards. You do have some dogs barking, and some of your leaders, some of the people that were, I don't want to take profits this year. I'm going to wait till next year so I can hold on to the taxes. So I think what you're seeing early on here is going to be symptomatic of the entire year.
Not willing to give it that much of a random event thing. If these rates continue to drive up every single day, I don't see the 20% rally.
Yeah,
are we gonna hit 5% on the 30 today?
I mean, I don't know about. I mean, people are talking now. Even 5.5 on the 10. I mean, that's gonna hurt the market, but. I mean, if you look at it, though, I mean, I always say, you can't fight the bond market. But if you really look what the bond market has done, really, since 2022, let alone when it – I'm just going to throw out that the COVID bump. But the market has weathered the storm of the TLT. It really has. Now, though, there's such a fervor. I mean, the market just – oh, remember when we were talking about 6 rate cuts – this year, and yeah. We were like, what are you talking about? And now what the real fear is, the real fear here is that you get some hot data today, you get some hot data tomorrow, you start getting, Q1 beats, but lower guidance. And then, I'm not going to say Powell's going to pivot again, but if he gives any, he said they pause and they're going to do, less cuts. Well, if he re-pivots again, then this market, people are going to be so twisted. That could derail my theory of a choppy year. If that happens, you get a Fed pivot going the other way, you get rates going out, then Katie bar the door.
I think he's the one time, and I don't want to go into it huge because I talked about it yesterday, but the one time you had a situation where people drove money into the market to the point where they caused incredible inflation, which they did, and you saw long-term rates down is when the Fed decided to go out and buy all the bonds that came out.
Yeah.
So which I don't think you've ever seen anywhere in the world up until this time. So if they're not going to do that, if they're not going to go buy every 10- and 30-year note that comes out and essentially bury anybody who tries to sell them, I don't see how, even if these guys push the short-term rates down to 4 or whatever, where are they now, 4.25 or something?
Mm-hmm.
If they drop them to 3.5, you might still see a 6.5, 7% 10-year rate, which means their borrowing price, they can't screw up here. And 1% is mm-hmm. $33 trillion. 1% is $330 billion a year in interest, isn't it? By my count. So I don't know what.
Yep.
I don't know what they. Yep. And we got a guy coming in saying he's going to cut taxes. Well, good luck with that. How do you do that?
And then the tariff talk to slow inflation. I don't know where I was in school that day when they talked about, higher prices being good for inflation. So a lot of unknowns here, Mark, and, still market relatively near close to all-time high.
Yeah.
So I guess it just goes to your, investing horizon, where you're at, how you feel on things, asset allocation. But right now, not getting a great start.
I've seen, Joel, and, this is just a guy talking because it has a lot of clients. I'm finding as you've mentioned a bunch of times, and Kenny's the same way, the market is very uneven right now. Some stocks, last year, the healthcare ended up the year down, even though it had a huge run up during the year, but it came down with the coincidental with the appointment of RFK or the attempted appointment, which I think he gets in. All of a sudden that whole section came down. And I have the last bunch of clients I've gotten because we're really good at it, but B, nobody else wants to do it. I have all kinds of people with real concentration issues where they've got, a good size portfolio in like one stock. And you look at the market, you just can't look at this market and say, even if we're up another 15% this year, that everybody's stock's going to be there. I mean, that's not what's happening.
That's certainly been characteristic of this market.
You got to be real careful with any of these stocks that aren't, in the public, you know, aren't the ones that aren't, that everybody wants. You could very easily have a stock that's last year that was down 10-15%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and just going to that leader, the laggard trade here, the XLV, did end up the year down, but that's having a good 2025.
Yeah, so, it's had a good start.
Yep, it's off to a good start. Good old Walgreens Boots Alliance is that, you know, that had a gap ago, needs to clear $12. You know, your health care, your UNH, that, you know, that's had a nice bump in the year. So you know, some of the things are working. Also energy, that's the other thing too. I mean, I'm looking at this, it won't be reflected in this month's number, but man, I don't like, you know, the USO going to 70 to 82.
I mean,
that makes, yeah, that's not good. But before I let you go, I just had to talk about my Michigan Wolverine basketball team a little bit. We're 5-0 in the Big Ten.
You're back to being a basketball school.
We're back to being a basketball. Of course, you know what? Whatever we are, I'll be a hockey school. You know, I'll be a swimming school. You know, I was a
You guys always have a good hockey team.
So we have two. We start 2 7-footers. Okay, one came over from FAU, Vlade Goldick, 7'2". Just a house. And then we have another guy. We have another 7-footer that transferred from Yale, Danny Wolf, who actually thinks that he's Magic Johnson. And this guy gets a rebound, dribbles up the court behind his through his legs. 11 out of 14 new players. Dusty May doing a hell of a job. I know we're going to lose him to the pros. But a little optimistic about Michigan basketball, but that's all I got for you.
Got to work that portal, buddy. Work the portal.
The portal. I'm going to enter the portal, Chief. Will you pick me up?
Yeah, what would we do with Carl in the portal?
I don't know. I mean, it would probably be an NIL bidding war.
Yeah.
God. Okay. All right. Thanks, Chief. Thanks, Carl. I'll talk to you guys next week. Go Blue.
You're going to put me in the portal?
Well, we'd pick you up on the other end. We'd see what the bids are.
Well, you know, yeah, I don't know about that. There could be. Is it possible to have a negative bid in there?
I don't. you know, it is. We you know, a lot of the stuff we're talking about is people doing real stuff in office. And one of the most interesting articles. I got to get the complete works. I saw it on sale once. I didn't get it. The complete works of Mike Royko, because Mike wrote a. There's a name people don't remember from the past, but by the way, could Mike get a job now? I'm thinking he couldn't.
By the way, I remember that guy. Yeah.
I don't bet he couldn't get a job now.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He wrote this article regarding Adlai Stevenson.
Inconvenient articles, right.
Yeah, he wrote this article regarding Adlai Stevenson, who, for those who don't know, his dad ran against Eisenhower twice, right? And lost both times?
Yes.
And he was governor, senator from Illinois, but very cerebral. Never a stitch of any kind of bad malfeasance from the guy or anything. The kid was the same way, and he became senator. And Mike Royko goes, the guy, he sits there and he spends his time in Washington looking at real problems and writing serious papers about the problem, and maybe here's a way to fix it, but definitely here it's growing. He goes, the other senators don't even read them. You know, the guy's doing exactly what you would expect some cerebral dude in the Senate is supposed to do, to look at things, look at a problem, try and figure out a way to fix it. Nobody, the guy ran for president, I don't know if he'd vote for himself.
Well, there you go, yeah.
I mean, nobody wants that. I mean, look at the city of Chicago, but then you look at, you know, we've got a guy that, I mean, I'm no fan of this mayor, everybody knows that. But you look at what's happening in the downtown area. There's another building that just blew out of. But John and I were talking about one yesterday. Now another one blew out last night. You know, but you know that the Northwestern. You know, somebody somewhere, Carl, as we talk about, you know, we're Stacks and Jacks, right? Somebody somewhere, as we see this explosion in football, in the NCAA, in the money. Somebody somewhere is going to have to stand up and say, "Hey, guys. This is no longer a tax-free operation. It's now a professional operation. You guys don't get any of these." Guess what? The state of Indiana now can charge their amusement tax for Notre Dame football tickets. mean, you, right. I mean, Northwestern here, I mean, you've been going through Chicago a little bit. If you went to their campus now, one of my friends was in there. God's sake, I was three parking garages over with bridges. They've got opticians on the second floor where all the restaurants and stuff are. The thing is a city. They probably in the last 10 years, 15 years have bought 3-4 buildings. Now those buildings come off the tax rolls. They don't even pay their water bill, for God's sake, Carl. How does an operation like that that probably pays the top 10 people way into the seven figures, something, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe even eight, and somebody, you can't pay your friggin' water bill? I mean, why does the city have to put up with that? You call that nonprofit? If I was the first guy, you'd be in class. I mean, I would never be a professor, but if I ever walked into Russell's class, his MBA class, the first thing I would do is put on a blackboard showing my age, define profit in today's world. I don't think anybody could do it.
Oh, yeah. That's tough issues there, right?
I mean, it used to be if you owned a place, you paid everybody, and the stuff that was left over, your reward for putting money up for the place was the profit. Where's all the money now? Is it, I mean, other than some, you know, a few really big, they're not profit. Everybody sucks the money off along the way. What do you think the profit at Commonwealth Edison would be if the top 500 people were paid market wage versus what they make?
Oh, good Lord, I don't know.
I mean, how much of that would... Nobody cares about the investor, do they? They give them a little bit of a dividend.
Oh, of course not. No.
I mean, what did Eric say? One of the biggest problems in the country is this massive managerial class. They don't have money in the business. They just think they deserve it all. I mean, how many people in the healthcare industry never went near a test tube, never went near a patient? They're making all the money.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the problem, right?
But how do you run on that and get a vote?
Well, that's the biggest problem right there. Okay, this is one of the things that really the big issue that you have when you really get down to it with politicians isn't the politicians, it's the people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like it's one of the things that has been a recurring theme in all the time I've been writing my blog, and it goes back to when I was running my company, is that it's the reason that I had all employee meetings every year, because legally, you know, I can't put the mandatory stuff that government makes me take out of your check cannot be on your stub. Okay, it's actually illegal for me to do that other than your income taxes. So, you know, so your Social Security tax, the part that you pay, is on your stub, but it's actually illegal for me to put the other half on there, on your check stub.
Well, because you're paying.
It's not a deduction.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a deduction, okay? But it is a mandatory cost imposed on me by the government of having you on the payroll.
Sure.
All right. And the same thing, you know, Chicago at the time, I don't know if it ever passed, but they were debating a head tax. Okay.
That's been debated for forever, and finally, you know what the head tax.
Well, they were threatening to do it at
you
the
know
time.
What the well there was a head tax.
Well, it
forever.
When I was there, they were threatening to, you know, to make changes that essentially would impose what amounted to a head tax. Okay, and I, you know, my office was in the city.
The original, you might know this, the original deal was they were going to put a transaction tax. This is like daily one. And the deal was they won't make a transaction tax because the exchanges here were so big at the time. It's probably before the options exchange. And they decided to go with a head tax. Well, as time went by, it became so onerous. I think it was repealed. Ricky, check this out. I bet it was repealed 10 years ago, finally. Maybe more. Ricky, see when you say repeal of Chicago's head tax. There was one for decades.
Yeah, I mean,
is
it's...
health tax?
Head tax, H-E-A-D.
Oh, head tax. Gotcha.
Head tax, yep. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is that so...
2014.
So
2014. No,
2014.
What a decade. Well, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's the thing is that so once a year... I had everybody come in there, and I laid out on the whiteboard all of the, you know, just as an aggregate, all right, all the people that are in there. All right, here's the aggregate amount that all of these things are, and this is these are just average percentages. Your number may be higher or lower or whatever, because I can't break it down. Legally, I cannot put this on your check stub. However, this is the money that if it wasn't grabbed out of your, you know, out of your earnings without you even knowing it, that you earned it, right?
Yeah.
Because you never see it. But for you being employed, I wouldn't have to pay it. So this is something that you earned, and then I had to steal it from you without telling you about it. And but for that, this money would be in your pocket, and you'd take it home. Because the guy down the street, if he gave it to you, I'd have to. Otherwise, you'd go work for him, right?
Well,
so, I mean, that's the way the market works. But that's the thing, is that the people, you know, they sit there at these meetings. The first time I did it, they were all slack-jawed. They're like, wait a minute, how much money? And I'm like, yeah, this is, you know, this is legally, this is what I have to do in order to run a company. And as soon as I hire the first employee, this money has to be, you know, paid to the government because I have you as an employee. And it makes, you know, and some of it was, you know, a percentage, some of it was a fixed amount. But here's what it is, what it all adds up to, and here's where it goes. This goes to the city, this goes to the state, this goes to the federal government. And you know, without that kind of education, though, Chief, how do you expect people to say, what am I getting for all this?
Well, the amount of education, I guess I'll mention this, but you know, maybe shouldn't, but then it's made very cogent. Right, one of the, out of all the stuff I say, which is a lot, right? I keep talking all the time. The one thing I think that makes the most sense, I said when I first, long before we started the show, somehow we've gotten a situation where the skill set needed to get elected to office does not match seemingly at all the skill set you wanted the person in office.
Right.
That's a problem.
Right.
And it's, I mean, we got this guy coming in as president, okay, because he appeals to all kinds of stuff, and he's kind of, if you like him, he's funny to listen to. If you don't, you can't, whatever it is. But the man, he's not Churchill, he's not Roosevelt. I mean, when it comes
not only that, but we've got a fiscal situation that if we don't get it under control, it's going to blow up in our face. And you're seeing it right now in the, you know, in the rate structure, and people in the markets are thinking happy days are here again because, you know, Trump won. Right.
Oh, yeah, but he's promised people so much stuff. This is going to be interesting the first couple months when all that stuff doesn't happen.
Well, and yet, you know, I mean, I'm sitting here looking at this. Okay, so from, you know, from basically the second week of September, which was the low point of the inversion in the yield curve, the chart goes from the lower left to the upper right. And it's essentially, you know, and that's the, you know, the IRX minus the TNX, right? So that's, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue what this is. And yet, inexorably, it keeps marching towards wider spreads, which, by the way, is what you'd expect, right? I mean, it should cost more money. I mean, it's about 6% now between the and of course, you know, all of these quoted are quoted with the decimal moved over one, you know, one number, right? So it's a little more than 0.5% difference between the 13-week bill and the 10-year, which is ridiculously compressed still.
But the direction is the other way.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, we've had a 30-year cycle from the 1980s. That they extended, and Trump was in the middle of the final act of that, okay, to try to keep the rah-rah going.
Well, nobody wants to be the last person in the party.
Listen, you don't want, well, you certainly don't want to be the guy in the back of the room when the curtains catch on fire, right?
No, I was stunned yesterday. I did it because Audrey and Jan were giving me grief on my inflation. We're talking about the dollar, right?
Right.
And so, I don't know if you hear that part. And I said, okay, when you ask me why does one currency slide versus another, generally one country can become more productive. There's all kinds of reasons. But for it to happen in a short period of time, it's usually the relative value of one versus the other.
Right.
And that value is usually determined by how much of it there is in the direction it's going in terms of volume, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was absolutely stunned when I've been watching the last few months, and it's making me very, very nervous how the money supply is ramping up again. They're right back to their old tricks. They're not fighting inflation at all right now. In the last month came out, we're at a 6.7% annual growth. And I'm thinking, you're not fighting inflation. You're creating inflation there by far. Because what's our growth? 2, maybe? 1.5? Maybe
well,
not even
and,
that.
And, well, yeah, not only that, but when you look at the population growth rate, boy, you really don't want it to be
so, these. So the question was, why all of a sudden is the dollar in the last 60, 90 days gotten so strong vis-a-vis the euro?
And the DXY yet
yeah.
has.
Yeah, yep. and I say, this can't be as simple. Now, of course, monetarists like me are all, you know, we're the scourge of the earth now, and we should be all in hell, because we're not supposed to believe that anymore. Sure enough, I dig up the EDU, euro-dollar money supply, and in the last month, they're at a 9.6% annual rate, and we're at 6.7. That's 3% difference. And the
there's
dollar is appreciated 3 or 4% against
about 3%, right?
Like this, why is this? I can't be the only one. You and I that are looking and saying this is so simple. What are we doing here? I mean, I don't,
Chief. Because if you go after these things, you know, this again, it goes back to what we've talked about in so many different areas, right? And it's the reason that I've been raising such a stink about this whole situation out in Los Angeles. And it's the same thing with the medical system. It all boils down to the same issue, which is that you can look at the data and you can see where is it going to cause a problem? Absolutely. Can I tell you exactly when it's going to blow up in your face? No, I can't tell you when the market's going to blow up in your face either. But what I absolutely can tell you is that if you double the load of something and you do not build out the infrastructure to support that, you either erase the margin that you used to have, the operational margin between.
I don't think they've had a margin in 40 years.
Well, but this is the point, okay, is that you erase that margin. Now, at the same time, you take the competent people who built this stuff, who thought about it, who understood the dangers if you got outside of the operational envelope.
Mulholland's been dead for 50 years, and it shows.
Chief, you replace them with people that do this stuff like they did over at Chernobyl, okay? The reactor design over there, they knew there was a safe operating envelope. They deliberately went outside of it on purpose several times and got away with it. It did not explode in their face. And they kept doing it. And then one day, they were outside that safe operating envelope. There was an incident. They had to shut it down immediately. And when they did, it blew up. And that was, and the thing is, that was not a unforeseeable event, you know, a pipe broke or something like this. Okay. They knew they were running in an area of the operating envelope that was unsound.
Carl, why, at all levels, I don't know if you remember, I'm going to have him back on hopefully next week, my friend Bill Moriarty, who's a civil engineer. And he was saying that the people that are in all these, you know, Illinois Department of Transportation, these people that do all this stuff on roadways, he goes, in my experience, they're to a man, they're incredibly competent. Really know their stuff. People let them alone to do their job. It was a good thing to come out of engineering school with a civil engineering degree. These companies you work for taught you this stuff. And when you started out, you know, and you're designing a roadway, they'd have the one guy, you know, maybe you did the trees when it was all over. I mean, it was your job. But everybody learned all the way along the way. And he says, now nobody wants to be a civil engineer, and all these guys are retiring. Because your collective knowledge, it's still all over the place. I mean, it's worldwide. He says, we're still putting dams up worldwide roads. It's not like we've lost it totally. But you sort of have to be careful. Do we have a professor on, Professor Hal?
Hey, he is there.
Hey, I gotta say a real quick story about, and this is not a shot sort of at anybody, but there's a group that, you know, on Friday nights, I pretty much, well, one guy's a real good friend. He hasn't been on the air, but he's always threatened to. He works for a distressed mortgage business and so forth, which, boy, those guys got stories. You know, they've got stories, even you guys who like to imagine the work. Some states, there are people that have not paid their mortgage in 12 years and they can't get them out.
Oh, my God.
you guys are professor grade. How can and it's all planned. It's all planned in advance.
Oh, yeah.
So you might say to yourself, how the hell do you do that? In New York, I could see Hal doing this because he was in Brooklyn for a while. Six people pile into like a building and they all sign the note, you can sequentially declare bankruptcy.
One after another,
and every time you declare bankruptcy, it takes 2 years to work through the bankruptcy system. Then the next guy declares. How the hell can you never? I mean, we're talking about one guy was telling me that this dude calls him up and he goes, "Hey, I think it might have been Biden or Trump. I think it was Biden. Gave everybody what another year, or 3 months to not pay him. What was it? It was like 3 months more to pay your mortgage." The guy says to him, "Hey, does that work for me?" And the guy goes, "What do you mean? You haven't paid in 5 years. What difference does it make to you?" Anyway, I'm one of these guys, good friend of mine. So
it wasn't a freebie, though. I mean,
yeah.
if they got three months free mortgage payments.
No.
Is that on the end of the loan, right?
You went on to the end of the loan. But this guy said, "Do I get another 3 months off?" And he goes, "What do you mean? You had 5 years off.
You haven't paid 5 years."
Kane said, "We're all done, dead in the long run. So how about we extend that mortgage indefinitely?"
Yeah, well, I mean, they had no intention of ever paying. But I've been trying to get somebody out because you couldn't boot anybody out there in the company. Anyway, my message is kind of on a, it's a sad note and it's a good note actually. He's a good friend of mine, and I'd gone home to watch the football game or whatever. And I hear this call later on that this guy had a heart attack in the bar downstairs. And the message is, I think he's going to be okay. Because he actually had I don't know what happened to him, but he was brain dead for, he didn't get any oxygen. But the weird part is he's got all these buddies and women that work with him. And we're talking about people that are in their 40s. They all have a job. They all have, like a family. They're not idiots, but they're not anywhere near trained in some stuff like maybe you think they ought to be. The guy goes down, and the women start screaming. Now, that's not going to help much. And the guys are, like, standing over him. The lady behind the bar, she's a vet tech, and she's a farm lady, grew up on a farm, knows a lot of stuff. And just, she's just a doer. She comes flying over the bar. She tells the other bartender, "You call 911. There's a firehouse next door. You go next door and knock on the door, but they won't help us unless we call. So you call, and the rest of you people get the hell out of the way." Starts pulling his sweater off and doing CPR. And the rest of the people they have no idea what to do. And these are all adults. I mean, how much of that is in the society right now? Nobody has a clue. The guys used to be my engineers here. They didn't know how to fill up a tire. They were at the gas station, and they go, the tire won't fill up. I said, "You drove it to the gas station." "Well, yeah." did you break the bead?" "What do you mean?" "Is the tire no longer attached to the rim?" "Oh, no, it's not attached to the rim anymore." I said, "You can fill it out, fill all the air you want in there. The cows come home, and there's nothing to seal it."
"Oh, is that a mechanical engineer?"
These guys were just, they were engineers from the radio show.
Oh, engineers from the radio show.
Like, what's the matter with you? Are we lacking in just basic... This is what you do. You call 911.
Well, if you get a flat tire, don't you call 911?
Oh, absolutely. So my niece, her boyfriend, real good guy, good softball player. I've known him for a while. He's a paramedic. And I said, "Look, this is what the girl downstairs did." He goes, "That's exactly what you do. If you need 2-3 people to help you, you tell somebody. You do this, you do this, you do this. Then you do what you have to do. And the first thing you do to the rest of the people... get the hell out of the way." He goes, you have four things to say. You have this one call 911, this one do this, everybody else get the hell out of the way, and you start doing what you're doing, you start doing the CPR. That's what you do. He goes, how many people even know that? I don't get it.
Well, it's kind of funny. I remember learning the Heimlich maneuver in high school, and my mom was chewing on some pork at a dinner at my aunt's house. There was a lot of us there, and she was choking, and everybody panicked.
Yeah,
nobody knew what to do. I walked over calmly and gave her the Heimlich, and then I even forgot about this. Last summer, my daughter was chewing on a piece of candy, and she started choking. And I walked over calmly and gave her the Heimlich, and everybody else is like, and I even forgot about it. So I'm not sure what kids are learning in high schools. I mean, we learned, I took woodshot, I took auto, I took a farm economics, home economics class in junior high school, where we learned a lot of skills, you know, life skills. And today you see cars. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there are cars. Every day I drive along the interstate to like Greensboro or drop my son off at high school or pick him up, I see at least two cars on the side of the road that are younger than mine. So I mean, do people even know how to put gas in a tank? I don't know, man. It's just crazy how little people know about how to take care of themselves.
Well, I mean, it's a different world. My Audrey, my significant other, who's been, you know, comes on every other Monday, her dad, she goes, I want to learn how to drive. He goes, the first thing you have to learn is how to change a tire. He made her change a tire before he gave her the first, you know, I mean, does anybody even, but I think what we talk a lot about on the show, it's always the same issue. I mean, if you got a 5-year-old building a Lincoln log house, you got to figure out what the house is going to look like. You got to put your logs in a row so you can put them together. Then you put them together. There's a sequence to all of this. Yeah. And what we were talking about with the fires out there is are we capable? I mean, is the city of Los Angeles, is the governor, even if, say, there's two different political parties, are we capable when this is over of saying, okay, let's get ourselves together. How could we have done it? You're not going to stop 100 mile an hour wind, okay, but could we have made this mitigated, like Carl would say, 30% next time, or get a head start on it? What do we need? Do the reservoirs, are they big enough? How the hell do we make another one if we don't? I mean, where can we even put another one? Are we involved with spreading some water? If there's rain in the northern part of the state, can we at least make sure all the reservoirs maybe have some water? What's it going to cost to transfer stuff back and forth if we need to? Whether we get 12 inches of rain in the northern part of the state and nothing in the south, can we? Whatever. Somebody needs to put up a list of 15, 20 questions, and people sit in a room without the press there and go through them. And is there a way to make it better without bankrupting the world or without telling anybody else you can't move here anymore? I think there's probably 5 or 6 things you could knock off, right? Comments that,
Chief. You know, Chief, there are several things that they've tried to do, and every time, and I mean, I could go get the list for you and go down it. Every environmental group out there sues, and so it's the same problem we have with trying to put up another nuclear power plant. You want to put up another power plant? Well, constructing the power plant costs $5 billion. Dealing with the lawsuits and the inevitable attempt to obstruct it costs another $15 billion. Now, if we don't stop that,
well,
then we're not going to get anything done.
You could never have redone Chicago until it burned down.
Well, yeah.
Now you have your opportunity. What did your buddy Rahm Emanuel say? Never waste a good crisis.
Well, you know what?
Well, yeah. You know, did you guys read about what they want to do in L.A.? They want to turn it into a green smart city, right?
Yeah.
And you have billionaires lining up to rebuild it. The Bezos Fund has dropped $12 million into it. I'm sure Jeff wants, you know, a piece of the property.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I don't think he's going to do it out of the kindness of his heart. It'd be interesting to find out what other billionaires are developing the new green L.A. just in time for the Summer Olympics, right?
Well, also,
before we lose Carl,
I want to ask him.
Natural disaster crisis.
Let me ask Carl one more question, Hal, because we're about to lose him. What do you make of... Do we have a new slot prime minister? So now the story this morning is that our buddy Musk is going to buy TikTok for what, cents on the buck?
Oh God! You know, I saw that yesterday. This is the one of the big problems that, and I don't know how we solve it because it's something that I saw the start of when I was running my internet firm, and it's one of the reasons I refuse to get involved with using a lot of these things. Is that all of this, if you think that Facebook and Instagram are worth $1 trillion between them, you know, Meta's market cap, right? Because they are a place for you to post pictures of your cat. You have rocks in your head. The reason that they're worth $1 trillion is because, and Zuckerberg has admitted he did this, is because it's a tool to shape consensus and make people do things, to get in your head and change your behavior. And he now he's crying that, oh, the Biden administration made him do this. Well, he said not word one about it during the entire period of time. And oh, by the way, take a look at Meta's stock price over the last 4 years. All right. So this is a huge, huge problem. And, you know, yes, we all had newspapers. You know, when I lived in Chicago, we still had the Tribune and the Sun-Times.
Well, when I was young, okay, we had four.
Well, but, you know, but I mean, I had two, right?
Yeah.
And not only did I have two,
by the way,
they're
still here.
Well, yeah, yeah, supposedly, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I had two newspapers. Then I had the Chicago Reader, alternative media, right?
Yeah, and the Onion.
I had a handful of others, right?
You don't remember the Chicago Seed, did you? That was the best. That was like the hippie newspaper back in the 70s. Chicago
Seed.
Well, the
Reader was one of my customers for a while.
Reader took over kind of from the Seed.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that was a different perspective, a different point of view, right? And then, you know, which AM radio station would you like to listen to today? I mean, same thing. And so, but this has all become part of the game. And so then you say, well, how do we solve this problem? Well, the first thing you have to do is figure out how you re-democratize information. Because if you think X has done that with Elon, just look at what happened to anybody that went after him on the H-1B issue. All right, their accounts got banned, they got demonetized, they got blackballed. You know,
they want to be the censor, right?
Well,
censorship,
of course,
censorship is horrible, except if it's you doing it.
Well, right, but here's the thing: it's not censorship just because people have a different political view. There's a pecuniary interest behind all of it.
Why? Again, sorry. Last question for you and the both of you guys. How the issue was my grandfather every night. Somebody's job was to go up and get the paper at 7 o'clock, right? Because that's when it got. And but if you would have asked him, if you could pull him out of the grave for a day and say, whose responsibility is it for having independent newspapers? He would say, it's yours. You got to buy the damn thing.
Well, yeah, if you don't buy it, nobody publishes it, right?
And so now everybody thinks that this should all be free. I mean, who pays? I mean, somebody has to pay for this. Nobody wants everything. You know, it's nuts.
Chief, didn't that happen as soon as the internet showed up? What was the first thing that people did with it? Number one, they used it for porn.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is why VHS won over Beta, even though Beta was a better format, because Sony refused to sell the blanks to the porn industry.
That's bad.
And the tapes were licensed.
That's bad.
That's the truth. That's why VHS won, is that JVC didn't care and Sony did. But one of the very first things that happened was there was an entire section of what was before the internet. It was called Usenet, before we had the web as a big thing. And it's three-quarters of the traffic ended up being 95%. Was stolen software and adult material. Every bit of it stolen.
No.
And then the same thing happened with Napster and music,
yeah,
right?
People don't change, do they?
No, they don't.
All right, Kyle, we got a big thing on Friday. Let's go through the labor numbers again a week after, because it seems like people are still going through those numbers and don't understand them, so we might have a little bit of a review on Friday.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay, but Hal, you've been listening to...
Yeah.
Pick up anywhere. What do you think? I mean, the fires, it looks like, you know, they were more than anybody could handle, in my opinion. But then again, they could have been handled better, like all the time. Why does some politician wants to actually do something about the infrastructure or the Army or the Navy or something and actually come up with a really good plan, nobody wants to vote for the guy. It's too damn boring, right?
Yeah. Well, out west, I'm from the west. And out west, I don't think people from the east really understand this.
No.
In the east, the forests are much different. They were decimated by pioneers and colonists using the wood for fuel, right? And then here comes, you know, the discovery of crude oil in Pennsylvania, and the whole eastern seaboard is reforested. Out west, every once in a while, nature wants to burn down the forest. That's just the reality of it. Lewis and Clark discovered this when they went to Oregon. They noted, I think I read this, where they noted in their journals that the skies were orange. And they were orange because of Western wildfires. And I've also read that Native Americans, you know, hundreds of years ago, figured out how to manage the forest, and they would do controlled burns. And we can't do that in California today. The government doesn't manage the forest. I think what California
does. Some of the stuff, though, I talked about this early in the show, though. When I was jogging years ago in Hollywood Hills, no way you're doing a controlled burn on a 45-degree slope when it's
Well, you don't have to do controlled burns in public areas, but you can do controlled burns in other places. But there's other things you can do, right? You can rake and clear all the dead bush, all the dead branches.
Did you ever see anybody doing a controlled burn?
Huh?
Did you ever see anybody?
Oh, we do controlled burns in Idaho all the time.
Well, I saw a couple in on the National Lakeshore in Indiana, and you know there still was a lot of grain, right? They were looking at the stuff that was the stuff at the bottom, the stuff that was dead. What do you call that? That's stuff that actually burns, right? Is the stuff that's dead?
Yeah, the brush.
The brush. So
twigs,
these guys,
broken branches.
They've got probably four or five, maybe six fire trucks. They've got a spot maybe 100 yards by 50 yards. And they got all these firemen, and they sprinkle all the area around it, right? And they start this thing up. The wind was calm. We're talking about on a flat piece of ground. You know, they looked like the most nervous dudes I ever saw. Yeah. They couldn't wait for that thing to burn down and put the water on that thing. All they're thinking about, what if we get some big breeze here all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden, what are we going to do? Call every other fire truck there is? There's no hydrant anywhere near here. I mean, this is more...
But I think the problem in California is that they want... You know, maybe they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart, but they wanted to restore California to its natural state. And California's natural state is dangerous for civilization.
Yeah.
And
well,
I don't know. Maybe they don't know that, but.
Doesn't California mean land of fire or something? Isn't that what the word means?
I mean, yeah, California. I mean, think about what California is. You could, if you're a Christian, you would say hot hell, right? Hot hell. Fornication. Yeah. Hot hell. But it means hot furnace. The Spaniards named it hot hell, hot furnace. Because why? Because the forest out there, they burn down on a cycle. And that's how the forest becomes healthier. When on our farm, or on Idaho farms, you burn the crops so that you put nitrogen back in the soil or something like that, right? It's kind of a thing.
The ashes got all kinds of nitrogen in it.
Yeah, so you burn your fields, and it's really common to do this in Idaho, in eastern Oregon, to burn down the fields. That's what nature does out west.
Well, I would say that you could do stuff like if you have an area that's all populated and a flat. I'm surprised this Pacific Palisades. I didn't realize that the flatlands had that much issue. I always thought the mountains and the canyons had the problem, but that's pretty flat. But you could do simple stuff like, you know, going forward, hey, if you're going to have a swimming pool, at least have a pump where you can use the water in the swimming pool.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of little stuff you could do. Now,
the thing, though, about water delivery is, like in New York City, they don't use pumps at all in New York City. They have these huge, massive reservoirs in the Catskill Mountains, and that feeds the water into New York City. So when you open the tap in a high-rise in New York City, there's not a pump pushing the water through your faucet. It's gravity drained from the Catskill Mountains. So in a fire situation...
Well, it depends on how high up you are.
Yeah. But all New York City is all gravity-fed water. There's no pumps.
I'll bet they have pumping stations.
Well, they may, but what I watched on Discovery Channel, I think it was a Discovery Channel, they built these huge, massive aquifers, these big tunnels under the ground from the Catskill Mountains, and they got two of them feeding New York City.
Well, the one leaks like a sieve, right?
How much water? In the movie, in the Die Hard, the third Die Hard movie, they're driving through one of them, right?
Well, is the second one done?
I don't know. I think it is. I mean, it's been a while since I watched the...
Well, the first one is... Didn't it get to the point where it was losing like 25% of its water along the way? They didn't know where?
I don't know. Yeah, that wasn't in the TV piece.
Well, Chicago has huge pumping stations. You look at this building and you see a huge stack of...
Oh, but Chicago's pretty flat, too.
Well, yeah, the lake's lower than the city.
Yeah, so you have to use pumping stations there. But in a place like California with the mountains, you can definitely put reservoirs up in the mountains. And when a fire happens in L.A., the whole West Coast is got, you know, there's a high risk of natural wildfires. And so what you would want to do, you would want to turn the power off, one. And if you turn the power off now and all you have is pumping stations, now you're not going to have water supply. So what you do is you build these reservoirs in the mountains to collect snow and rainfall. And then you put them in the mountains. And you can do it very discreetly so people don't
California
see it.
Did that, didn't I think I keep using the name Mulholland, but I think he's the guy back in the 20s and 30s that designed that whole system, wasn't that supposed to be one of the engineering wonders of the world? The
people they have canals in California, right? And in the movie Terminator 2 and in the movie Grease, they're empty, right? Because you know Arnold Schwarzenegger is driving his motorcycle through one of those concrete canals.
Well, those are designed for water overflow.
Well, overflow, but you can collect the water.
Remember the song, drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry?
Yeah. Well, you know, in Greece, they're drag racing through one of them, right? But you can collect the water. You can store the water. And during a fire like out west, you got to turn the power off, right? You're going to turn the power off. So you need gravity-fed hydraulic systems. And that's why you put the reservoirs in the mountains above all the homes.
Well, my,
and that gravity is going to force the water through the hydrant.
My family member in-law who's a fireman says if you open two or three hydrants in sequence, you're losing pressure already.
Is that in Chicago or is that out west?
Well, in the cities, you're losing pressure because if they're in sequence, I mean, you still can... You still have enough. That's why all the trucks have pumping units in the truck to make it go faster.
Yeah.
You could never just hook up to a hydrant and shoot the thing 50 feet in the air.
Well, yeah, I know that. But what I'm saying is you have to have those water reservoirs in the mountains, gravity feeding the.
Hell, what's going on with this PPI number? It's not out yet. Except we're now down. We're unchanged on both the S&P and the Nasdaq after being up a bunch.
Well, I think inflation is a problem still. I don't think they tamed it. If you look at the data I'm looking at, M2 seems to be accelerating.
Did you see, if you listened yesterday, you see the Eurodollar number? Last month, the rate of money supply increase is 9.6% on an annual basis.
Yeah, it's not surprising at all because you got the break-even inflation rate, the tip spread. That looks to be rising. You look at the yields on the long end, those are all dramatically rising. And I don't think it's because, you know, a boom is underway. I think it's because investors are demanding higher yields because they believe inflation is going to be a problem in the future.
Yeah,
and that's confirmed by the tip spread.
What do you make of, a lot of the, I'll say the arguments, or not really arguments, but the discussions we have among the panelists here on the show, a lot of it have to do with just the information and how it gets out. I mean, Hal and Kevin, to their credit, want to see a lot of stuff solved like today and yesterday. And by the way, so would I, and I think so would you. But I look at this as a monetarist. We started screwing up with the money supply in 1968. Went through essentially 13 years almost, 12 years of inflation again, and then we had stuff on top of that with the Arab oil embargo and things like that. And it wasn't until, well, when did 1979 that somebody said, enough, we've taken enough pain, we got to turn this bus around. They put Volcker in there. And I was not a huge fan of him because I think he torpedoed the savings and loans, but the fact is he did what he had to do with recognize what was causing it when everybody else.
I would say that he's the least worst, least bad.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I'm saying is now all of a sudden we've got since certainly 2000 we've been doing this slow inflation creep the whole way. Where when I say slow inflation creep, I think I've got this down here somewhere in pieces of paper. I could do it again to make sure I'm accurate, but I think from 2000 certainly to 2008 our money supply went up an average of what, 6.5-5.5% a year.
Yeah.
And our growth was probably 2. So every year you pump 3-4% in there. Why didn't it show up? Well, most of it went in medical care. It went to three places. Medical care went in education, and it probably went in taxes. I mean, but your other stuff didn't go up as much. And all of a sudden, after 2008, we increased the money supply even more. I think since 2008 to 2015 was like 8% a year or 7.5%. I mean, and that's incredibly inflationary. But if you kind of lie on it, I did a study, Al, and I've told you this before. I think from 2000 to 2020, I think the CPI was supposed to be up 70% or 75% or something like that. If you look at the numbers in that 20 years, and yet I went back and I looked at, I could tell from PTI and other places, our increase in hospitalization we paid for people, even with them getting like big producer price increases, 0.2% versus 0.4 estimate. So this is all real good for us. If you believe that, I got a hill for you to buy. Anyway, it was essentially 2.85. So it was really 3-4 times what they said. Now, if you looked at college tuition, guess what? 2.85, same number. And then I tried to find primary education, and it's hard to find because it's done through taxation, right? And I went to Illinois. This is a sloppy. So I went to Illinois.
I think you have to look at expenditures per child or something.
Well, I just did the Illinois state taxes, property taxes, and they were up 2.85. It was the same number. So the real numbers that were affecting people the most, that probably were not even in the. I think if you looked at housing prices, you got to the same number. So in reality, the CPI was totally messed up. So they got away with lying to you about it for a while, because most people, if you honestly don't, I think you should care, but people don't seem to give a rat's ass about if how much their company pays for their insurance. They just want their stuff paid for whenever they go to the hospital. And it's really surprising to me how it's not. Why is it not more? Again, we've got, X Food and Energy is 0.2. They're both, so they're a little less than estimated. S&P futures are up 40, NASDAQ futures up 175. We're going to break a little late because then the rest of the world will catch up and we'll go through where everybody is. But how is it it's not in people's face so much? If you go to get your job as a professor or any job, and they say, okay, how are we going to pay you $200,000 a year and these are your benefit packages? And you say, well, you know what? My wife's a judge, or she's a teacher, or something, or she's a policewoman, whatever it is. Her hospitalization pays mine. You don't have to pay that. I want the extra $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
They don't. Nobody will ever give it to you.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. Right?
So people don't have an idea that is what. And it's interesting. I argued with my nephew one night, and he says, I said, you know, if you didn't have to, if it wasn't so high. Whenever that goes up $100, that should be in your paycheck.
Yeah.
And he says, no, it shouldn't. And I go, what do you mean, no, it shouldn't? It's money they're paying for you to work there. He says, yeah, but if you don't need it at all, if your wife works, they're never giving it to you. So people never they never make the connection between they're actually paying for that. And, oh, by the way, when you tell the insurance company you want to go to the hospital and do some stuff and they pay for it, that you're the one who's paying it. So somehow they've got us all, I don't know what the term would be, brain dead or something, or brainwashed about how this actually even works.
Yeah, we're institutionalized like Brooks in Shawshank Redemption, right?
Yeah.
This is the world that we grew up in. This is the only world we know. We only know the world where the Fed creates inflation through money printing. And the only world we know is if we're married and both people are working, we're paying twice as much for health insurance than we should be. That's why I'm a big advocate of divorcing health insurance from employment.
I thought you were going to say divorcing your wife so you don't have to pay it.
Yeah. You know, if you look at Kevin Spacey's character in American Beauty, the fact that he had to keep working at a job he hated because he had the benefits, the health insurance, that was part of his compensation, it made him resent his wife and his daughter, right? He couldn't just quit because he'd lose his benefits. His wife would put pressure on him. You got to stay in your job so we can have our benefits, right? So to me, tying health insurance to a job is wrong. Because sure. I think what happens is you create these, amongst men like Kevin Spacey, you create this animosity, these divisions, you know, between him and his employer, resentments, you know, maybe with his kids and his wife, because he has to stay at this job, right? So I don't think health insurance should at all be tied. Now, if a company wants to voluntarily offer health insurance,
but it shouldn't be tax deductible for the company and not for you.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is it shouldn't be voluntary. If a company wants to offer it as part of its benefits, that's great. It can be like
it is voluntary. You don't have to do it.
Well, every firm that has 50 or more full-time employees has to provide their employees with full-time.
They have to provide the employees the means to get it. You don't have to pay for all of it. You pay for a very minimal amount.
Yeah, well, but what I'm saying is it is part of the compensation. It's been part of the compensation.
Oh, I agree.
It's the 1930s and 40s, right?
But I think if we let's go to a quick break because when we come back, the numbers are starting to move. S&P futures up 32, NASDAQ futures up 134. It's kind of where they were when I came in. Then they shot all the way down thinking the number would be bad, and the number came out good. Gee, you think there's any correlation between the rally in the market yesterday and this number being good, Hal? Did anybody know it before that this morning? I'm shocked. I would be shocked if that happened, would you?
Right. Oh, what's that? I thought we were going to break.
We are. Be right back. I had to lob that one out there. Maybe just.
I was getting a cup of coffee.
You grab a cup of coffee. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 28.50. We were up, then we were unchanged, then we flew back up, and now we're coming down a little bit here. S&P futures up 122, they were just up 140. This is right after this very light PPI number. Now, I don't exactly know why, but some months CPI is ahead of PPI, and some months the other way around. Well, CPI is tomorrow, which is more of a number, but last month the PPI was hot, didn't really move the market much. Now, this month it's a little slow, so we even have the 10-year backing off a little bit here. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 155.8%, FTSE down 10.1%, CAC around up 63.8%. So we've got mostly the upside there. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 716, ouch, 1.8%. That's 38,474. Hang Seng up 345. It's 19,209. They're going to try and redo that assault on 20 again. Shanghai up 80, it's 2.5%. So China markets were strong just across the board. Yesterday, we were down a boatload and came back. Dow was actually up 358. We were down almost 700 the day before. So Dow's been pretty volatile. S&Ps were up 9. NASDAQ still closed down 73. You know, at one point, it was down like, 350 or something. It was down huge. Bonds, we're moving the other way here. We actually have not much. 10-year is 4.98. The 30-year is 4.98. 10-year is 4.79. So this report is good, but it's not being received that well by the bond guys. Excuse me, oil down 60 cents, 78.22. So finally backed off after a big serious rally. Brent down 65 cents, 80.36. Natural gas down 17 cents, 3.75. RBOB down a penny, 2.08. We've got gold up 80 cents, 26.79. Silver up 2 cents, 30.33. So not much going on there. Foreign exchange. This is one that's been crazy. Euro is still 102.54, and British pound 121.51. So the dollar still remains very strong. We got crypto up 3,500, 96,457. This thing remains amazingly volatile. Ricky, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:39 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. It's cold, though. 16 degrees right now with a high of 22. A little accumulation of snow early this morning. Otherwise, a breezy and cold with maybe a little bit of sun today. Tonight will be clear with and cold with a low of 9 degrees Fahrenheit. Phoenix, Arizona, 35 degrees right now with a high of 66. Mostly sunny all day. And tonight will be clear and chilly with a low of 41 degrees. Let's go to traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 32 minutes, 49 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 41 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 36 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 41 minutes as well. Let's go to sports in Chicago. Yesterday, the Blackhawks lose to the Flames 5-2. And today, we got the Pelicans playing at Bulls at 7 p.m. and the Suns playing at Hawks 6:30 p.m. Lastly, NFL. Yesterday, the Rams beat the Vikings 27-9. And we got divisional playoffs this weekend, Saturday, January 18th. We got Texans at Chiefs at 3:30 p.m. and Commanders at Lions at 7 p.m. Lastly, Sunday, January 19th, Rams at Eagles 2 p.m. and Ravens at Bills 5:30 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Well, Kevin just wrote in. I think somehow you have to, if you're going to do anything with this insurance, you've got to make it deductible for people or not deductible for companies or something. And you've got to get rid of these idea that the different prices. I mean, right now, you have to have insurance because they've got a network and you don't.
Yeah. I think the way insurance should run is it should be catastrophic. It shouldn't include, you know, oil changes and tire rotations. It should just be catastrophic. If people want to buy a more comprehensive policy, that's great. But in general, I think most people would choose catastrophic policies to lower the price. And then they could pay for things out of pocket. I mentioned last week, I think, that this guy that runs independent pharmacies in Texas, he was saying that in some states, if you pay cash, you're going to pay less than the copay. So at the pharmacy. So I think if you get rid of the third party payer for all this preventive maintenance stuff, and you let people pay for their own personal oil changes. I'm using the car analogy because in car insurance, you know, insurance is catastrophic, and people pay for the preventive maintenance, right? But you get rid of the third party payer system, because that's what health insurance is just a payment system, right? With government mandated services that you have to get whether you like it or not. Otherwise, you kind of lose out, right? So you got to get rid of that third party payer system and just make it catastrophic.
Well, I don't disagree with that, except if there's all different prices, you got a problem with that.
I think in a market system, though, yeah, I mean, you look at things like LASIK eye surgery. The quality has gone way up. Access has gone way up, and the price has come down. And that would happen in medicine. And I think there'd be less power in the monopoly that is mainstream medicine.
I'm going to the dentist today to get my teeth cleaned, you know. I just pay the guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, in North Carolina, I think if you have dental, they'll ask you if you have dental insurance. And if you have dental insurance, they're more likely to take you, because then they can have you do your x-rays every 6 months. And I think the x-ray thing is just a boondoggle. Right? Why do you need x-rays every 6 months?
I think I pay for them. I think it's every couple of years.
Well, every time we go to get our teeth cleaned, and we do it once every 6 months as a family, we all go in. Everybody's got to get their x-rays. Why do we need x-rays every 6 months? Most of the time, we're never even looking at the x-rays. But it's part of this payment system, right? So I firmly believe that all insurance should be catastrophic. It doesn't matter if it's home,
auto. It ought to be if you have the same price as other people, but you don't.
Well, all I'm saying is
the network's the issue.
We'd get rid of all this monopoly power, I think, and consumers would now know what the prices are. They would actually care about what the prices are. I think you'd have a more innovative medical system. You'd have fewer people dictating what doctors can and cannot do, like, for example, in the COVID, when doctors disagreed with the mainstream narrative, they were threatened with losing their licenses.
They're still,
that should not happen in medicine.
It's still happening because you, yeah. If you go in, if whether you see a medical practitioner, MP or an MA, what do they call them? The people that are not quite doctors.
Yeah.
My
cousin Matt is one.
Well, you everything goes in the computer.
Physician assistant.
You tell
right?
Yeah. You tell physician them your what's wrong with you. You have your symptoms, and the thing pops out a drug.
Yeah.
And you get the drug. You know, the doctor can't say, yeah, wait a minute, I don't like that drug. I've got to give another drug because that's the one that their group recommends. Now, whether they're getting a kickback or something, a benefit manager, who the hell knows? But they could very well be. But we had a client when we first started PTI. We'll talk about a character, but the guy was a massive developer out in California. But before that, Arizona. Before that, he owned a factory of some kind in Columbus, Indiana. And I don't know what the hell they made, but they made something. And they had, a couple, 200-300 people working for him. And they self-insured everything.
Yeah.
He said they went and got a Lloyd's of London policy, where if somebody, actually, what's your biggest risks on people is not even really heart surgery. It's more like your biggest expense is if somebody has a kid that's messed up and needs to be taken care of for 20 years. That's your biggest risk, and cancer's one of them. The other stuff...
Well, chronic diseases driven by poor diets and low exercise is, I think, 80%.
Well, but I'm saying your biggest risk is a kid who's messed up on birth. Anyway, the point being is they get stuff for all that, for that covering. And he said, you just go to the doctor and we'll just pay it.
Hmm.
And that was before all the doctors got together and all the other stuff. He said, but if somebody had, if somebody's kid, broke his wrist playing hockey or something, you went to the place, you got it set, and they paid it. He said, but now it's, the price to him was the same it was to everybody else. Then all of a sudden it got to the point where if you and I need an appendectomy, it's $20,000. If the insurance company pays for it, it's $8,000. Well, you can't. There's no way you can self-insure with that, right? How can you if everybody else is paying that much more?
Well, catastrophic policy, it's going to cover that, right?
No, although a broken arm is not catastrophic.
All I'm saying is if and we don't have this system, we don't have a free market system, so we don't have an idea, we don't have an understanding of how it works. But older people that in Canada. And older people in the United States that take vacations to places like Los Algodones, Mexico, they have a pretty good idea of what the system could look like. Or the British who take vacations in India, they have a pretty good idea of what a market system would look like, a free market system in healthcare. And it means, and it's the same outcome as you see in LASIK. You see prices come down, quality of the surgeries going up, and access increasing. That's what happens when the market is free, and we don't have that system. And it was actually hijacked by a group of doctors.
Well,
in the 1800s.
In some areas, actually, we do. It's crazy. Say you want to. I had to get an MRI, maybe 2 years ago, right? on a back injury from years ago when I was athletic and hurt myself in the gym, right? Anyway, stuff like that, it comes back on you, doesn't it? It never really goes away. Anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't. My knee is still giving me problems after I had it.
From back when you were a high school football star.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I never got hurt in anything but basketball. The only time I ever got hurt ever was playing basketball.
The only time I broke fingers was playing basketball, never softball.
Well, my left thumb is still jammed from reaching, putting my hand in the passing lane on a three-quarter length fast break pass. It popped my thumb and it's still...
Yeah, well, nothing's worse than basketball coming in and somebody hits your hand.
Or somebody run into your knee when you're doing a layup, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Anyway, so the prices of an MRI, I'm going to say Northwestern, 5 or 6 G maybe.
Yeah.
There's places that are 500. There are places that if you just walk in, you don't need a prescription. You say, I hurt my elbow, I'd like an MRI.
Yeah.
It's like $400. And they'll read it for you.
Yeah, imagine that world everywhere in the United States. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, well,
but But what happened in the 1800s is the medical doctors that would focus on painkillers, that would become the AMA. And the AMA got control of the medical system by getting the power to license medical schools and doctors. And they eliminated their competition. They used that power to limit their competition. And a lot of the people they eliminated from that profession were doctors who were female, black, and Jewish. And that then they discovered that by limiting access to the profession, they could drive their salaries up.
Yeah, if you got rid of the Jewish guys, you got rid of half the doctors.
That is the organization today that kind of basically runs the system. And they basically have a monopoly on knowledge. And they prevent...
Would you mind if I stopped calling you Little Milt? If I started calling you Little Milt? Milton Friedman, that was his two biggest examples of restriction of supply were the medical schools, ding, ding, yep. ding, Little Milt, and the other one was cab medallions.
Yeah.
But you're right. But now, I think...
that monopoly is running our system today.
Except that now, I think...
It's why we have 80% of diseases,
I think,
probably chronic, as a result of poor diets.
I think you have to... move on from that, though, because right now, that has nothing to do with the profits and the doctor's nowhere near the highest paid player anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah, now it's probably in the administrators, right? Like in the universities.
If you went to Northwestern, I'd like to give you a tour. Of course, I don't know the place that well, but
the doctors are now the victims.
Yeah, they're the victims. They're the employees.
They're being forced. They're being forced into working for a hospital as basically an employee.
If you're in some of these groups, it's your 10, 12 minutes a patient.
Yeah, yeah.
But Northwestern is a city. It's not a hospital. It's a city.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to guess, I don't even know what percentage
the doctors are. They're like the union workers. They're clocking in and clocking out.
Yeah. And I don't know how you get, plus I think the medical care is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of the general practitioner that's known you your whole life.
Well, think about our Western medicine. It basically wants to standardize everything, right? A drug can't get approved unless it's effective with, like, I don't know, 95, 99% of the population, right? But that ignores the fact that we're all so unique. Some people are allergic to this. Some people are allergic to that. Some people can't eat fava beans. Some people can.
Well,
that
you
just
know,
shows
it,
you that
it,
we're
it,
all so unique.
It can get very sinister because... my buddy John and Jerry used to show this. His brother Paul, who actually played linebacker opposite Ron Rivera, who's interviewing for the Bears coaching job. Ron's a good guy, good friend of...
Do people really want the Bears coaching job or the Dallas Cowboys coaching job, by the way?
Everybody wants a head coaching job.
Yeah, but you're not going to have any control, and you're basically setting yourself up to be fired 2 years later.
Well, it's a horrible organization. There's no doubt about that. But Paul,
I want a job that's going to fire me in 2 years. That's crazy.
Well, Paul ends up, unfortunately, perishing from Lou Gehrig's disease.
Mm.
And he went to, I tell you, one of the nicest people I've ever met. And he went through some of these big studies, these big, you know, because there's always studies on Lou Gehrig's disease. I mean, it's a horrible disease. Has anybody ever survived it? There's people who survived cancer. There's people who survived the bubonic plague. I don't think anybody's ever survived this. I mean, it's just a question of how long it takes. But anyway, he went to some of these tests, and one of the tests was really helping him. Now, who knows if it would have, you know, helped them forever, but it was really helping him, but it only was, you know, 30, 40% effective. Yeah. So I said to John, and his dad's a big-time surgeon. I go, well, can't you guys buy enough of that drug so at least Paul and the people that it was working for? He goes, oh, no, they destroy it all. I go, they do what? They just get rid of it. If three people are like cured, and the rest of the people, you know, it only 40% effective, they don't say it's available for the three people.
Hmm.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
I mean, you would say, well, okay, if it says, rather than throw it in the river, this guy wants to buy it. We'll let him buy it for not very much dough. They don't do that. It's nuts. So how let's get back to economic. I have you here, Professor. How long can they blow this? We're actually going to reinflate the economy by pouring money in the system again. I see these long-term rates keep going. I don't. Today they're down a little bit because of this number, but how long? You know, I don't know. What are these guys going to take a chance on 8% rates when you got $33 trillion in a hole?
I don't know. I think the yields are going to go higher. I have this Fred chart that I created. You can create your own Federal Reserve economic database charts, and I created this one that tracks the yield curve through time. And right now, when you look at it, the longer-term yields are really skyrocketing up. And the ones at the lower end of the maturity, the ones with lower maturities, they are hovering near the federal funds rate, but they look like they're going to head up too. And I think what's going on is people that are going to lock their money away for 5, 10, 20 years in a treasury, they're going to demand higher yields because inflation is not tamed. And I don't think the Fed has any... I think they're going to just continue to inflate. I don't think they want the housing bubble to burst. I mean, you look at home prices. Home prices look like they're kind of cresting. But I don't think any time it crested in the last couple of years, the Fed just kept pumping money into the system. So I don't think they want the housing bubble to burst. So I think inflation is just going to keep rising. And... The yields are going to go higher. The yield curve is going to steepen, and I don't think it has anything to do with a robust economy.
Well, we just crept through the $1.003 trillion on the interest on debt.
Yeah, the debt growing, the deficits growing. I mean, I think under Trump, I don't think you're going to see deficits under $1 trillion. I mean, one, because interest on the debt alone is over $1 trillion.
Yeah, I don't. You know,
I just see it going higher.
Can you explain to me? We got a few minutes. I don't think you can because nobody seems to be able to. But if you can, why? If you look at the budget deficit official, it's $2 trillion. It's a little over $2 trillion. Yet if you look at the increase in the national debt, it's going up faster than two. In other words, this year the national debt's going to go up more than $2 trillion. What's not being counted? Do you have any idea? I can't seem to get.
Yeah. Government numbers. I really don't trust them. I mean, I think we got a pretty good reason why we don't trust them during the last 3 or 4 years with respect to the BLS employment numbers, right? So I just cannot trust anything government's. Government statistics, and I think the United States government statistics are better or less bad than other nations' government statistics. I don't know if you remember this, but there was an economist in Greece who was revealing that the government statistics that Greece was putting out so they could, I guess, get into the European Union, he was exposing that the government was lying, and the government was going to prosecute him.
Exaggerating.
Yeah, exaggerating. Yeah. So they were going to prosecute him for doing that.
Lying is such a bad word, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but, I mean, come on.
I know.
Yeah,
exaggerating.
I mean, what are they really doing, right? Are they telling us the truth? If they're not telling us the truth, they're lying, right? And I think we got to call people out. When, you know, stop saying things like they're not being truthful. Come on, they're just lying, okay?
Well, if we start doing that to our new president, you can do that all day.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're Republican or Democrat. If they're not telling the truth, they're lying.
Well, and people's response that like the guy say, well, everybody lies, which is actually a pretty
fair... That's not an excuse to continue to lie.
No, but that's sort of the way it's been, right? I mean, everybody who's been in the job. But then again, as a populace, we will continue to elect people we shouldn't elect because of what they tell us we want to hear, and it's on both sides. And when they get in there, they don't do it.
Trump ripped the Federal Reserve in 2016 when he was running for office for creating what he called a fake economy with low interest rates. But as soon as he became president, man, he was really pushing the Fed to keep those interest rates low. Right. So
he owns property. Trump, we're never going to be able to get him to separate his own personal stuff from his governing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not Harry Truman at all.
Well, you know, and I think he really understands what's going on. But, you know, again, he's a populist. He knows that trade deficits mean we're going to have net capital inflows, surpluses, right? And, you know, a budget deficit is a surplus of financial capital, right? Because that money just doesn't get hidden in China's mattress. It's going to end up back in the United States. And it comes back to the United States in the form of maybe stock purchases or real estate purchases. It comes back to the United States, right? And he knows that, right? So the bigger the trade deficit is, the probably better it is for his real estate empire in the United States, right?
Yeah, you can't really separate his own business. Yeah. And I think, you know, whatever I've met in the man, it seems like if it's good for me, it must be good for everybody. But that's not the way the world works necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. I honestly, with somebody new coming in, I hope that he really ends up doing a pretty good job, because some of the stuff that he...
Yeah, I hope he does a good job too, but I just don't think it's going to be possible.
There's too many things arrayed against him. Some of his instincts are correct. I mean, a lot of them are correct, I think. But, you know... I do
prefer a businessman to a politician, because a businessman that owns businesses throughout the world, hotels or whatnot, really doesn't want war, because war is bad for, you know, the hotel business. It's bad for the real estate business. A politician, on the other hand, that owns... You know, or family members that own stock in defense contractors. War is good for business, right?
You know who was an engineer, a brilliant man, and a worldwide businessman, don't you? Probably the smartest. Probably one of the smartest presidents we ever had. Herbert Hoover.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
But Hoover was an engineer, right?
He had businesses all over the world.
I think he bought into that neat statecraft, where, you know, the government could engineer. Prosperity, and I don't think the government can engineer prosperity. I think it just engineers poverty.
I think he absolutely understood exactly what was going on, tried to do a lot of stuff that Roosevelt ended up doing, and his party fought him big
time.
Well,
Roosevelt ran against Hoover by saying that he was a socialist, if you remember. Well, he was no free market.
But he was encountered a situation actually not that dissimilar to now. Yeah. He had 50% of the population back then was agrarian, and agrarian since 1920 to 1930 or 29 was in not even a recession, was in a depression.
Yeah.
And yet the stock market was going nuts. Other than today, the only time in our country's history where the top 1% owned more than they do now was in 1929.
Yeah. That didn't end
very well, did it?
Yeah, that's after the Fed discovered that when its regional banks, when the 12 regional banks were buying up treasuries, they discovered that when they purchased those treasuries, they discovered that the money supply increased, and that's when open market purchases were kind of invented. And then the New York Fed, they wanted a monopoly on it, so they got the exclusive right to buy securities because they're in the financial capital of the United States, New York City. And so what you saw was this great inflation, which we have been told is an economic boom. It was actually a great inflation. And when the bottom dropped out, it was basically just an asset bubble popping.
Well, but when the asset bubble popped, meaning the crash, you had banks that had problems. And you had but the rest of the economy was in such bad shape.
Yeah.
If you took that piece off, you had nothing left. That's the problem. You know, I worry about now is
they're parallel. Yeah, the parallels are striking with
your asset prices and home prices and stock prices are kind of the only legs of the stool that we have going for us.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't want the
market. If you're in the top 1%, you're like, hey, never been better.
Yeah, but what if if all of a sudden we get a And I, boy, sure as hell want to see this for my clients or anybody. If we get a 40-50% cut in the stock market, we got no stools left.
Yeah.
But let's not hope that happens, because we don't need that.
Let's not speak that into existence, right?
No, let's not do that. And let's hope, that these guys have, that they see some stuff, that they do some stuff in the medical area. I'm hopeful for them. I honestly, yeah.
We need a big dose of freedom. That's what we need.
Well,
we need
yeah.
A big dose of freedom.
We don't need Elon Musk as prime minister. He's talking about a guy who's only out for himself. Good Lord.
I agree with that. We need a big dose of economic freedom, not a consolidation of information.
No, I don't think we do. You have a good week, bud? Where are you? Are you in New York?
The semester started yesterday, and all my classes are online this semester, so I've been busy all weekend long getting all my classes set up.
Why are you guys online? The whole world's going back to work.
Well, you know, we had this online program at Antioch State University, and most of our courses at the undergraduate level in the first 2-3 years, most of them are online still. We do have in-person classes next fall.
How can I wing stuff at you if I'm online? Yeah.
Well, next fall, I'll be hopefully teaching History of Economic Thought in person. That'd be a lot of fun.
Well, I have to, I promise I'll clean my place. I'll see if I can dig out some of my notes. Boy, we had some serious stuff in that. I took 2 quarters of that at the University of Chicago.
Oh, I love History of Economic Thought. I love it. And I love mathematical economics, but I like to teach that, hey, these math models are not the end-all, be-all. They help us explain the world. They're not the only experiment.
I think I learned more in that class than in any other class about economics.
Oh, the History of Economic Thought is just a cool class.
When you're talking about the industrial revolutions and things like that, it's how some stuff counts and then doesn't count. I mean, it's crazy. We go through economic numbers. Anyway, we'll talk more about that. But S&P futures up 22. S&P futures up 110 after a good PPI number. Back tomorrow with Stocks and Jacks, and we'll talk about the CPI number.
That's all, folks.